Welcome to The Hopcast, a weekly podcast from Hoback Books, an independent publisher of thrillers, crime, and suspense novels. Each week, we'll take you behind the scenes of what we do, the challenges and the triumphs, the bumps and troughs of building a new creative business in this pandemic world. We'll hear from the people who make all this possible, the authors, cover designers, and editors, and we'll have expert insights from our guest star interviews. Nothing is off the agenda on The Hopcast from Hoback Books, as we combined trad values and an indie spirit.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome again to The Hopcast, another special edition from the London Book Fair, but it is technically show number 65.
It feels like we've just done this.
Yeah, it does. The first episode went up yesterday with this morning, with a wonderful interview with J.D. Kirk, or Barry Hutchison,
who has
grabbed us at the London Book Fair today and offered us two further guests.
Which we will reveal later.
We will. But we are delighted to say, we ought to say who we are and what we do. I'm Adrian Hobart.
I'm Rebecca Collins.
And together we run Hoback Books, UK independent publishers of the following genres.
Crime.
Suspense.
Thrillers.
And mysteries. She is available for bar mitzvahs and things
and
like that.
And blind date presenting.
Yeah, you could be. Yeah, it was a very good Scylla. But we are delighted that our very, very first author of all time is with us.
Of all time. That makes it sound like a dinosaur.
Well, we've got 21 now, but the very first to join us was Robert Dawes.
Hello there.
Beautifully said.
Yes, I'm now 127 years of age and feeling every bit of it.
It's not that long ago.
Now that makes us about 125 then.
You're a mere youthful person. Probably about 96, 97.
But it's not that long ago. I mean, we keep reminding ourselves because pandemic has messed up all of our sense of timing.
Yeah, it certainly has.
But we
it still does.
Yeah, it does. But we first published a book with you. I'm trying to remember now.
July. In the middle.
So we're nearly 2 years.
It was in lockdown.
Coming up for 2 years.
Yes, 2 years. It's flown by, hasn't it, really? I mean, it's been sort of followed the COVID pandemic, absolutely. But here we are, hopefully at the end of it. We're sitting in Express Mo, which is a lovely cafe, opposite
Olympia.
Yeah. I've just had a wonderful bowl of spicy tonkatsu ramen.
Yes, and I've had some chicken, what you just said. And Adrian,
I had
polished off
the medium set sushi.
Oh, yes, very, very neat and tidy.
It was. We should talk in Japanese. Nihongo dekimasu.
Oh. Is that actually authentic Japanese?
No, it is, yeah.
I lived there for 2 years.
Oh, God.
Go on, give us some more.
Let's have some more.
It sounds sexy when you say it.
Watashi wa Rebecca-san. Konnichiwa. Sayonara.
Which in English means, can I have another coffee, please?
Yeah. Two bottles of acai and,
So, yes, it's full of atmosphere. We've just had a downpour outside, and we've left the main halls of this very special event that you've been covering with earnest and great professionalism, may I add, and we'll be continuing to do all week long.
That's the hope.
I mean, to be fair, as you would have experienced when you walked in, it is just a frenzy.
It's heaving,
isn't it? And sensory overload.
It's actually too much. I mean, all the major publishers, large, medium, and small, are here pretty much. The independent book publishers are represented, and certainly half the whole seems to be agents sort of dealing with rights for foreign markets.
It looks a bit like the Wall Street for books to me.
It's a little bit like that. It does give you a headache. You have to adjust. I did.
Yeah, you do need to pack your paracetamol when you come here.
You do. But anyway, it's incredibly impressive. And one thing you do realise straight away is, well, two things. One, books is big business, if you get it right. And also, obviously, there's still massive demand. The demise of the reading that we've all heard of over the years, albeit I think one of the only positive bumps of COVID, is that people have taken to reading again.
Yeah, and in new formats. So they've gone online and but I think that what the one negative perhaps from our indie view is that those big publishers that have all those enormous stands that look like they've been transferred from the Champs-Élysées or something like that. The fact is that they are now parking their tanks on the digital lawn that was the free run of the independent community until 2 years ago. And now they understand the importance of e-books because they couldn't sell physical copies for a couple of years. And so what did they do? They came in and started outbidding on adverts and stuff like that. So that's one of the real problems that independent authors are finding.
So what independent authors used to be able to make a speciality of and define themselves in business certainly by has now sort of slipped away. Yeah, it's still there, they're still doing it, clearly, and some very, very successfully indeed.
Indeed, but I think that all of the ones that we're meeting and seeing, and we've seen LJ Ross and our friend JD Kirk were on the platform. They were saying that one of the reasons they're successful is they know exactly what the audience wants.
Yes.
And so I think that the indie community who could sell books by doing what they wanted to do, that is much harder to do now. So all of the authors, successful authors that are with us at London Book Fair that we are having conversations with, have all done the research.
Rachel McLean,
exactly what we had a long conversation with her at the end of the day yesterday. And I celebrated my millionth pound raised from my books.
Yes.
When was it? A couple of days
ago? Yeah, it wasn't very long ago.
It was in her hotel room here. You know, she's...
Wow.
And she's done that in the space of about a year. And it's when she went out and researched what the market wanted.
Yes. Before she even began writing.
Exactly.
Didn't she?
Yeah. She went and read what the tropes were. She saw what
and there's countless books that sort of give advice on this. There was one that's something, the bestseller formula that came out a few years ago.
Yes.
Did you ever read that?
Oh, yeah.
Deals with algorithms and things that are beyond me, certainly. it's a many, many faceted industry. And it's not very often you get everyone, writers, publishers, agents, buyers, marketers, the whole lot in one room, albeit a huge exhibition hall.
Absolutely, but I think what's interesting
is... I just had a weird thought. Say there was a zombie apocalypse in there.
Yes.
What would people read?
It's a very good idea.
There would be no books made.
I don't mean it was a very good idea. It's a very interesting notion, I should have said.
Well, let's do it.
That's why we're in the cafe across the road, because they're not going to get us.
That's your next book.
This is something that's just struck me. I mean, it's the first time I've been in an environment where there is still a class system in play for a very long time. Book publishing is not about being egalitarian and supportive of each other. It's dog eat dog, and there are the big five, and everyone, and they look down upon the rest of us from Olympus, and that's how it feels in there. It's built
Olympus and Olympia.
It's because it's no coincidence that the indie community are shoved on the mezzanine at the back of the grand hall in a tiny area with not enough seats for the people who want to listen to indie authors talking about how they've done things.
No.
You know, whereas the rest of the place is just dominated.
But that's an interesting observation from you, of course, because you have a foot in both worlds. You're a traditional publisher and understand, well, I mean, what's your line?
Oh, the trad values, indie spirit.
Exactly. So, I mean, you're looking at things from both sides.
I know we're greedy, aren't we?
quite right. I think you're setting up a model which is different. And, you know, the fact is you can't take on the big boys and there's no point. All you can do, as we've been talking today, is get the best stories you can and make them as special as you can with the authors. And just get them out there. I mean, obviously, money is a big thing, you know. But even the big publishers, you know, the advances aren't what they were.
No.
You know, but many thousands of writers who over the years were used to getting advances get none now, and they have to write on spec alongside everybody else. So the whole nature of the business has changed. The money's going somewhere, but it's not necessarily going where
it's
used to.
It's in the coffee in there.
It is, yes.
So I have to say, I mean, we had an experience this morning. The first thing we did when we got in was we decided, right, we're going to just find a corner to...
Weep in?
No. I mean, we're going to find a corner where we could just get the phone out, look at the diary of things that were happening at London, but things we wanted to do.
Yes.
And we thought, well, we'll go to the back of the rights room, which is a separate section. It's in the grand hall, but sort of tucked under the mezzanine. And it's just row upon rows of desks. It's almost Orwellian in its look.
Oh, and it's absolutely that, isn't it?
And that's where all the agents
certainly
are.
Certainly Kafkaesque.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. Now, yesterday afternoon, we got in there. We just got scanned in. This morning, we were told, do you have an appointment? I was honest and said, no, we haven't got an appointment. Well, you can't come in then. And so actually there are guards on those doors.
Oh, I know, I got chucked out and I didn't even realise I was anywhere to be chucked out of. I just got I went, oh, that's Curtis Brown over there.
Yeah.
I had a look and she said, excuse me, where do you think you're going?
Exactly. And I appreciate that that's for the efficient running of the thing, but at the same time, it's another thing that tells you that, you know...
Your name's not Dan, you're not coming in?
Yeah, I mean... I get very sensitive about this stuff.
I know, you're
which
bitter
you
and twisted.
No,
we've got used to it over the 2 years.
Yeah.
But yes, I understand. You do feel that you're out of the club, but I also understand that. I suppose there has to be some form to it. I mean, there's probably people who've spent 3 years trying to get an appointment at one of those desks.
Quite possibly,
gold dust.
And all of that. And really, that's been the nature of us talking today, really, trying to find a way of a thought to actually make the smaller publishers unique in what they can give. But so many smaller publishers have to concentrate on this and the ways they go about it. The industry is changing. As you say, the independent publishers and writers have lost one way of doing it because the big boys are taking over, you know, in so many areas with e-books. So you constantly have to keep on your toes.
Absolutely.
And find new ways to do it. And it is possible. It really is possible, and it's frustrating, and you know, you feel, well, what's the point? I'm sure thousands of writers and many publishers feel, you know, what's the point of this? We don't stand a chance. The market is never going to be ours. But it is possible. I'm an eternal optimist, but it is possible. You're beginning to do it, you know,
yeah,
in very short order. Open to new ideas. You're flexible.
That's why I'm Becky Bendilegs.
Yeah, and you're constantly thinking, you're constantly being creative. So basically, as we said earlier, this time next year you'll walk through those portals and there'll be people rushing up to you and just saying, are you? You're not. Are you? And you'll say, yes, I am. And you'll say, yes, I am, but in Japanese.
We may well do.
I look forward to that.
Well, no, I think next year, you know, there's no question that there is a big advantage of having a physical space that is yours.
Yes.
For people to come and find
you. You need a base camp when you try to climb Everest.
Right, absolutely. And so that's something that we need to figure out. And, you know, it's also important to remember that, you know, London Book Fair is not the be-all and end-all. It just happens to be, you know, 150 miles down the road from where we are based. But the fact is that most rights are sold at the Frankfurt Book Fair.
And yes. Which is a bit further away.
Which is a hell of a walk.
It is. But I mean, in many ways, a lot of the deals will be started here and finished in Frankfurt.
Yes.
I think that's the nature of it. And you know, the fact, as you know, in any walk of life, being recognised, being, you know, it takes time for people to know that you exist. And once they do, and the ones that are prepared to engage with you, they're the ones you're looking to work with. But to come in cold, it's really hard.
It's a bit like walking in naked, isn't it?
Well, it feels a little bit that way. But
I haven't seen you try that yet. Let's do that when we get back in the hall in about half an hour.
He reminds us of Pineapple Man, who's figured out how to...
We are going to find Pineapple Man.
Yeah, we will.
Well, goodness knows what he looks like in the nude. Maybe we get to find out why he got that name.
He's a bit spiky.
Well, no, I mean, as we will find out when we speak to Pineapple Man at some point in the next two shows, he told us that... I mean, you've acted in period drama and probably period settings, where pineapple seemed to be a very prominent piece of symbology.
Yes.
Around stately homes and things like that.
Yes. Oh yeah, I mean they're hugely popular, and I guess that there's some eroticism attached to it.
He was saying that people would rent pineapples just to show that they had access to a pineapple.
Yes.
in the 17th century.
To rent a pineapple in the 17th century.
Really?
Yeah. So they put gilded pineapples all over their
what they should rooms. Have done is made a time machine, come here now, gone to the local market, got a few pineapples, gone back, made a million.
Well, there's so many things you could do that with, and not just a pineapple. maybe the fashion was for just sitting on them. But I don't know. Well, yes, the pineapple man. Well, he's to come. Coming shortly on Hobcast Book Show.
Yeah, the Hobcast Book Show is proud to present Pineapple Man.
Made me sit on a passion fruit. For that, I'm eternally grateful.
Or kiwi.
But, I mean, what's... I mean, your impression then of where you are in the industry and looking at the way that things are operating, you see it flourishing?
Yes. It is flourishing, there's no doubt about it, but there's one of the things I know, I mean, after 42 years an actor and the massive difficulties it is to actually remain in that particular profession for any length of time, is that you're just constantly having to sort of try to reinvent yourself, try to keep up, and also you just have to keep on working and working and working, which is what you guys do, because very often the opportunities come when you're at when you think you can go no further.
Yes.
And you just relax a little bit, and the moment you actually take a deep breath, then you think, oh, that's it, something comes in, because you've actually allowed it to happen.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, because it's such a creative thing, the reason you're in the business is because you love stories, you love creative people.
Yeah, yeah.
You are creative people yourself, you like people, and that's why we do it. So you can look at the corporate world, and the fact is, they're there, and thank goodness they are, because they really do sustain so much of the industry worldwide, and I suppose they take the rewards of their particular investment. They do have a great stranglehold over so much of the market, and maybe strangle words too harsh a phrase really, but I understand why they have to do what they have to do, and they keep millions upon millions of readers very happy over the books that they produce on the whole. I think at any other level, be a writer or publisher, you just have to just keep chipping away, but not chipping away, as you've said, not just, you can't go up against them. All you can do is
you
trade in your
them.
Own unique way of
exactly.
doing things.
You have to find your own way.
And people will come to you. And that's, again, that's what seems to be happening with you guys at Hobeck. And coming here, I think, is probably, of course it's an education. It's been an education for me. But I don't feel daunted by it. Mm. I feel quite inspired by it. And I'm very glad that, I'm very glad I'm with you guys. Because one of the things that you can do is I feel I have a certain amount of control in certain things and areas. I feel it's a collaboration. I feel there's an ease of communicating, which I think not every writer in the world feels with their agents or publishers.
No.
Depending on, I guess, how successful they happen to be in the moment. I know many writers whose careers, they say, where's my career gone? And they've got no relationship with agent or broadcasters, because they're let go. And I think if you've never had a close relationship, it's very hard to realize when it's gone.
Yeah.
Because most relationships tend to be rather formal and businesslike. And
we're certainly not that.
No. You're not. So anyway, I mean, it's keep on doing what we all do.
As Churchill
keep on
saying,
enjoying it.
Keep on buggering on.
keep on buggering on.
KBO.
But, I mean, here's a question from one of your authors. I mean, where would you like to be in 2 years' time on from today?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I think that first and foremost, we want to get to the point where everyone we sign feels that they're getting the audience they deserve. Now, that's not so easy to achieve.
No.
That's something we can't guarantee yet.
We can't guarantee it at the moment. We try everything we possibly can. In terms of the business, look, turnover, we would love to get it to the sort of the figures where, you know, we're in a position where we can draw a salary. That would be lovely, rather than the situation.
Yeah.
You know, we're 2 years in. I mean, this is what happens when you're in a new company, and in a sense, you go in with optimism and all that sort of thing, but a lot of naivety too. And you know, the cold reality has been that, you know, we are growing sales, but not at the rate we aspire to. But what we really want to be in a position to be is confident going into a place like that, where we have the relationships with the sort of people who can influence write sales abroad and in television.
Yeah.
We've got a band of authors, as we currently have, still happy with us in 2 years' time, which is no small achievement, because, you know, we're not always going to get things right.
No.
But if we can keep people on board and keep with us and still have faith in us and actually deliver the results that they would hope for, then that's what we're aiming for. But we want Hoback to still exist in 2 years' time. That is not small aspiration at the moment in the sort of environment that we're working in.
Absolutely.
But ultimately, we have invested so much of ourselves, and so much of our own money has gone into this business. We cannot let it fail. We will carry on fighting.
I know you will.
And
in the trenches.
On
the Grand Hall.
One of the lovely things about being one of your writers is that I really appreciate the lack of BS.
Yeah.
In dealing with you,
I wouldn't know how to do BS.
No, well, it's part and parcel
really
of any business, isn't it? And you know, just listen to what you're saying now. So many people run around trying to pretend that there's something that they're not, as opposed to just saying, "This is what we are. This is what we want to be, and this is where we are at the moment." And I think that's an admirable thing, really. And I think that's what leads to trust. And trust is hugely important.
I think that's absolutely the core of it. Rebecca and I, we do not hide the reality.
No.
And that will be uncomfortable for some people involved with Hoback listening to this. There is no magic wand anymore. I think that the indie scene, people made quick bucks when it first launched.
Yes.
And I think now, because the traditional marketplace has moved in and said, that's how we make money when we can't sell in bookshops. We still have the stranglehold, which is a good phrase, on bookshops and presence in bookshops, and they always will.
Yes.
Yeah, and like you were saying, there's no point fighting that because you'll never win.
It's guerrilla tactics.
You have to be innovative, and you have to think of something different, something that they haven't thought of, and that they might think, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and we will find that methodology at some point.
So this 2 year time thing for me is to be remembered for something, or for people to see you and go, oh, you're the publisher that does that, or you're the publisher that tried that and that was really interesting, or even if it's the podcast, you're the publisher that did that podcast.
I'd love everybody, you know, I'd like us to be in a position, for instance, where we've got a strong mailing list in terms of numbers.
Yes.
Not necessarily engagement, but if we were in a position where every time we put an email out that says we've got a new book out, 1,000 people clicked and bought it because they knew that it's a Hoback book and it's going to be good.
Yes.
That is the aim for 2 years' time. Because that then means that you are making enough money from that one email to pay for everything that it takes to make a book.
Yes.
On the first, and then everything is upside from there. We're not at that position yet, but there's no question we have not released a duff book yet. No. Nowhere near. They're great books. And as long as
not only the content, but the way they look.
Yeah, exactly. Every aspect of it is.
Because we take all that very seriously, don't we?
Yeah, well, that's the trad values.
Yeah, I think that's
even more so.
That's important.
Yeah, well, we hear about trad. I mean, we were talking to on the show yesterday, and J.D. Kirk said when he was working for HarperCollins, one of his books was printed, and it was riddled with mistakes, including his name being wrong on the front. And
not a great start.
No. So the first 13,000 print run had to be pulled. And they said, we'll do an emergency print run because it was a launch party, you need copies there, we'll get it done. They didn't. 3 days later, they eventually printed it, and they'd sent the same PDF file to the printers and done another 13,000 book run, which was completely wrong. And they pulped the whole lot, 26,000 copies. That isn't going to happen on our watch.
And if it did, we'd be bankrupt.
Yeah, we would. We wouldn't be around for very long. We wouldn't let us sing any coffees.
We come back to this thing where, you know, you we're standing over there and there's Hatchet and the booksellers and there's, you know, HarperCollins and there's Bloomsbury and whatever. You know, these are publishers going back over 100 years, many of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And before, and I sometimes think you're very hard on yourself. 2 years is absolutely nothing for setting up a successful business, as anyone knows. The indication that you still go, 2 years and all the rest of it, is a real indication of, one, how much you care, and one, how much you put into it. I mean, you never stop working, it seems to me. So the fact that you say, well, 2 years, if we're still here in 2 years' time, it will be, as you well know, and you'll be doing very, very nicely. But it will have taken the full 4 years of investment of time, energy, and taste and wisdom to actually get there. And, you know, in 10 years' time, who knows? You know,
I'll be 60.
Yes, well, great. Well, you'll be on your yacht by then. I would have thought. And
with a lot of cats.
I think you're right. I think that you never hear an entrepreneur ever say, it was a breeze. It is always this. We always thought, you know, there were times when we thought we'd never get through it and we were going to close. And then suddenly all the hard work paid off. And it's the same for those indie authors who are sitting there on a table who started off with, you know, 25. As L.J. Ross said, my first book went into the world, sold 25 on the first day from friends and family, and then sank like without a trace to start with. And gradually the momentum built and I kept writing and I kept going at it. And now
it's not giving up.
She's a millionaireess, and with enough money to be able to just do philanthropic things around the Northeast for the benefit of literacy and supporting other authors, and it's fantastic to see. But it came through sheer bloody hard work.
Yeah, and it is sheer, rude word, hard work.
There is no other way to do it. I mean, people love a story of an overnight success. You know, that's great. But, I mean, the chances of that happening, are so, so rare. I mean, hard graft and actually belief in yourself. And what I find interesting is what you've been so openly through in the last 2 years is pretty much similar to any creative person's struggle. You have the highs, you have the lows, you have the self-doubt, you have the undying belief. All these things are crossing your mind within the matter of minutes sometimes.
Yes.
But, you know, basically if you hit on something and you're flexible, this is another thing I'd say about you guys. You are flexible. You're not closed to anything. You'll try new things.
We'll try anything.
And you'll be honest if they don't work. And then they'll be, you know, then you'll continue doing what you always do, but you're quite flexible in that, and that is something where an awful lot of organisations aren't. They're not as flexible as a smaller publishing house, and I think that really is very, very useful to be quicker, to be flexible, to be able to take inspiration and run with it, without having to go through countless committee meetings and you know, months and months of this and that, whatever. You know, that's a great advantage. You know, guerrilla publishing.
Yeah, and being nimble. It is absolutely,
3 a.m. decision making.
Yes, we do a lot of that. A lot of that. Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining
Not
us on the podcast again.
How about a random question?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, throw Robin a random question. Come on.
What is your favourite cheese and why?
Oh, my favourite cheese, I have to say, is I like a smoked cheddar.
Oh, I do too.
A smoked cheddar. It's out there now. I'll never be able to take that back.
You always reach for the applewood when you're in there?
Applewood, but if I go to the counter and there's a particularly nice smoked gouda also very nice. And they've smoked isn't supposed to be very good for you, but I don't care. I don't smoke cigarettes, so I might as well smoke cheese. So that's it. I'm not going to tell you my second favourite jam, which is my wife and I's, Amy's and I's favourite line from the great, fantastic, ever-decreasing circles, Richard Bryant and Peter Egan. Yeah, so yeah, that's where I am on my cheese board.
Smoked cheese.
On a regular basis.
Well, I think we could share a cheese board because I like the mature cheddar, not smoked. You like the soppy camembert things.
Yeah, I like a good soft cheese. I like a smoked cheddar for sure.
Yeah, so we've got a hard nut, we've got a smoked nut, and we've got a sloppy nut.
And now we know what we're going to get you for Christmas.
Yes. A 6-week-old brie.
We're in the most popular bit of the whole fair, it seems, Rebecca.
I feel like I'm on a tube, a very busy tube. Drinking beer, though.
Yeah, that's not so bad. So this is the IPG Drinks Do, and the entire fair, I keep calling it a festival, seems to have descended on the place.
Well, why not, when there's free drinks on offer?
And we're just trying to grab one or two people to say what they're doing and why they're here.
I'm Hattie Grunewald. I'm a literary agent at the Blair Partnership.
Oh, fantastic. How's it gone so far for you? It's a bewildering event, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm so glad to be back. It's been such a long time, and we've got a really exciting book this year that everyone's going mad about, which is like a mythological retelling of Psyche and Eros, which Orion have just preempted, and we're getting lots of international deals, so it's a fun fair so far.
Oh, fantastic. So, it's interesting, the preempting thing. We noticed in the bookseller, you know, the different verbs they use, swoop, preempt. So you've got to preempt. That must feel fantastic.
Yes, it's the most nerve-wracking thing when it happens for an agent because you have to make a decision quickly, but it is very exciting once it's all agreed.
Yeah. And then, have you ever been involved in, I've seen this week, 16-way auctions and things like that. I mean, that's crazy.
Yes, that's slightly higher than I've ever got up to. I don't know if I should be admitting that on my podcast, but yeah, it's fun when you have a lot of publishers bidding. I had like a nice 6-way one before Christmas and that felt good.
And how long have you been in the business?
I think I'm 9 years in the business. Started out as an intern at Blake Friedman Agency, and I've been at the Blair Partnership the last 2.5 years.
Fantastic. And they're looking after you well?
Yes, I love it. It's really great.
Because we were butchering about other employers before that. So, you're at the book fair with a beer. Who are you and what are you doing at the book fair?
All right, my name is Mark Ingram. I work for a company called Jove.
Yep.
We're a scientific publisher of videos and educational resources, so for STEM.
Okay, yeah. And where are you based?
We headquarters in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but we've got satellite offices in London and Melbourne and India.
Wow. And how are sales going and the relationship building going here?
At the conference, good. A lot of potential partnerships, some good leads, and having really good conversations. It's just generally good to speak to people in person again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. It really is. It's a bit bewildering. I mean, I'm sort of going, too many people. I mean, I haven't been in an environment like this for a very long time.
Yeah, you kind of get that kind of PTSD from COVID, don't you? It's like even at the drinks reception here, there's so many people huddled in one place. But you know what? I feel lucky to be able to get out and do this again, so yeah. We're enjoying it.
And in terms of that video content, who's presenting that for you?
In terms of, so we are the publisher and the curator of it. So we, for our education content, we curate that in-house,
right.
And it's digested primarily by undergraduate students.
Okay.
When they are doing their learning at school and, well, more at home in the latest remote teaching environments.
So presumably the pandemic's been a good thing for you, has it?
I mean, you could say that, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a blessing for us in a strange sense. You know, we were fortunate that our content was able to help people in the pandemic. You know, so we were quite lucky in that regard. Yeah.
And with one day to go, how are you feeling energy wise?
Spirits are high.
Yeah. Good. Thank you so much for speaking to us. Cheers.
And now I have control. So we found two other people to talk to, and so first of all, I just want to know who you are and what company you are from and why you're here.
Why me? Hello, I'm Daniela Blechner. I'm an author, book journey mentor, founder of a company called Conscious Dreams Publishing. We're with the IPG at the moment on their lovely stand at 6E70. We provide bespoke publishing and mentoring services to authors with powerful messages and stories to share. And I've really just come here to network, to learn more about the industry, and to learn more about IPG and network with independent companies and learn about publishing, sorry, selling and buying of rights as well.
So how long have you been, how long's your company been in business?
We've been going for 6 years, so I would say officially from 2016, so that is 6 years, isn't it? I feel like we've lost the last 2 years, so I can't keep track. So about 6 years.
And how have you found the book fair this time around?
Absolutely loving the book fair. Last time, this is my first experience actually having an exhibition or having a stand. Again, obviously because of the pandemic, I had booked this 2 years ago, so it does feel like, it's definitely different. But when I've come before, I've come as an attendee, so it's a different experience coming as an attendee as to coming to exhibit. So it's great. There's a lot going on, lots of meetings, lots of different seminars, so it's just working out where to be, at what time. Yeah, yes. Definitely enjoy it. But it is a lot quieter, I'm finding, than when I was last here, which I think is a good thing in a way, because there's more of an opportunity for quality meets and to really network and have good conversations.
Exactly, yes. I mean, someone else said that as well, that it's quieter. That's great. Have you got any questions?
Yeah, I mean, what was the inspiration to setting it up in the first place?
In a weird way, now this sounds strange, but it was accidental. I've always wanted to be an author myself. I started off writing a middle grade fantasy book. The book that I first published 8 books. So the book that I first published actually wasn't that middle grade book. And I am going a different route. I'm going the traditional route for that particular book. But the book that I was publishing, I was going to agents, I was speaking to traditional companies, and I didn't feel, I felt there was only so far I could go. And I published my own book through my own company, and it did quite well. But I had lots of people, mainly women, women from marginalised backgrounds, coming to me and saying, can you help me to publish my book? And there were everyday women like Jasmine here with amazing stories. Not all of them were writers. Some of them were fantastic writers, but some of them just had a powerful story, but they didn't have an outlet or a place to share that story. And so I started off helping, you know, as a labour of love. Mm. Then they started doing really well, and I thought, oh, I should have charged. This needs to be a business. And so I set the business up. And from then, we've published over 140 books. I've mentored 200 authors, not just publishing books, but helping them. I'm an English teacher as well, so I help them in terms of writing, structure, learning about the book publishing industry, how to promote and market their books. So many authors were getting stuck, you know, using particular companies that printed their book for, you know,
the vast sums of money.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you said it. But vast sums of money, and they didn't care about the author, they didn't care about how they're going to market, promote their book, what, you know, how they can use their book as a marketing strategy. And then they were taking, you know, huge royalties, and the author didn't know, you know, what my royalties are, you know, how many books have I sold. So it's about, it's the teacher in me, it's the mentoring side, and helping authors to be able to thrive and have a career in, you know, authoring as well.
I'm going to ask you a controversial question, because clearly the mainstream industry has woken up to its diversity issues, but only in the last few months, it feels like.
Yeah,
how do you feel about that? That there's suddenly, you know, there's umpteen scholarships and bursaries and competitions. I mean, obviously it's welcome in the terms of they've finally woken up to there's a problem, but do you feel any cynicism towards the way they're taking the approach?
I talk about this a lot with the hashtag representation matters, diversity matters. So we've been going for 6 years, so we've published over 140 books. You know, I've come across a plethora of black, Asian, I hate the term BAME, we all hate it, to be honest. It lumps us into one.
Awful.
But that's what we're called in the report.
Yeah.
We all hate it. A plethora of amazing authors with amazing ideas, and suddenly all these opportunities are coming. And we do talk about this a lot. It's great in the sense these opportunities are here, but it's the intention behind it. Are you trying to tick a box? Do you really understand where we're coming from? When I'm going on the websites, so for example, I'm also, you know, an author, and I'm planning to go through the traditional route. And I'm a real avid researcher. I'll look at all of the companies. Like, the first thing I do is I look at who's in the senior management, who's in the leadership, who are the agents, what do they look like?
Yeah.
And I can spot maybe one or two. So it's not about giving us this token. Yeah, we want to bang, you know, trend word, hashtag, you know, diverse authors. We've always always been here. We're not suddenly appeared. We've always been here. This is why we've created our own. This is why I've created this platform. And I publish authors from all over the world, so we're not just, you know, publishing marginalised authors, but there hasn't been a platform for us, and suddenly this is opening up because of something that's always been a problem.
Guilt.
And, yeah, guilt. You know, and I think with the George Floyd thing, Joy Gardner, I could talk about this for ages, you know, Joy Gardner, so many British people, black British, you know, male and females have gone through similar, you know, cases, and it's what the media decide to give attention to then becomes a sense of, wow, we've got to do something now, and it does feel a bit like virtue signaling. Don't get me wrong, I've shared these opportunities with my community and people have jumped on it, but what happens to, you know, the sense of this person has a talent, this person has a great story, they're fantastic at writing. We don't want to be just tokens. We don't want to be accepted because you need to tick a box. We want to be accepted because we've got talent and we recognise for what we're offering and what we have to say and how we have to say it. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say for now.
Yeah, we've all got a drink in hand, and you know we can leave it there. But
that's a pretty question. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, thank you. We really appreciate your time, and thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you so much for asking me that question as well, and thank you so much for coming to speak to us.
Pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you.
We're joined by Jasmine Russell, and you're here in what capacity?
I'm an author. I'm an author of a new book called The Unseen Veil, published by Danny, which just spoke a few minutes ago, by Conscious Dreams Publishing. So, yeah, I'm here visiting today for the first time as an author.
How does it feel? Because we find it completely overwhelming coming to London Book Fair.
It is definitely. I did feel overwhelmed when I walked in and I thought, oh my goodness, where am I going to go first? And who am I going to speak to? It was just loads of people everywhere. But then as I started walking through it, I guess it got not easier, but it wasn't as overwhelming. I think I got into speaking to different people and it just was much better, much more relaxing. Yeah, so I've definitely enjoyed it and I definitely will come back tomorrow as well.
Tell me about that journey then to authorship and bringing a book out. How long's that been a dream?
Yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do, to write a book, but I never really did it until just over the pandemic, when I had a story to share about being in an emotionally abusive marriage and then leaving and finding freedom. And the journey's been great, all thanks to, again, my publisher, Danny. Sorry, I keep mentioning her, but from Conscious Dreams Publishing, she's my book mentor. So it really did help the process of writing, because I had no idea how I was going to go about it. I'd written my first manuscript and I just didn't know what to do next. And then, yeah, it's made it a lot easier having a book mentor and an amazing company.
And how does it feel having that book out or coming out? I mean, we speak to our authors, quite a lot of them are first timers as well. It's the fulfillment of a dream. Is that how it feels to you?
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. It's also quite nerve-wracking as well, because it is a memoir, it is my personal story, it is my journey and what I've gone through. So it's also quite nerve-wracking just because of what it is, and I'm sharing my story to the world. But at the same time, it has opened a lot of opportunities, and I've met so many people through this whole writing process and also publishing. So it's overall, it's great. I love it. I want to write more books.
Well, it's a very tough, obviously you're dealing with your personal story, very tough subject. Difficult to find a publisher, I'd have thought. I mean, I know Danny's fabulously supportive, but to take a book on of that, with that theme and that sort of story and the things that are within it, can't be easy.
Yeah, to be honest, I had no idea. So I didn't know where really to go to. Until why? So it was through a friend that recommended me to Conscious Dreams Publishing, and, well, Danny. And yeah, I was just amazed when I spoke with her, and then she was like, yeah, you've got a powerful story to share. And I was like, oh my gosh, really? In my head, I thought, ah, actually, this is going to come alive. And it did. So I am really happy, because I had no idea how I would share my story. I know it's quite a deep topic that no one not many people speak about, you know, leaving a marriage and an emotionally abusive marriage and abuse, domestic abuse, and finding freedom. So I was really happy to have it published and, you know, to go through that journey of writing easily, not quite stressful. So, yeah.
Having that support. And I noticed by your badge, your day job, you're a teacher. So do the pupils know the book's coming out? Are they excited by the prospect?
No, my students don't know. I've actually kept that a secret for the last 7 months at school. So I've just started working as a maths teacher at Arc Putney Academy since last September. So the whole writing process, they had no idea. And they still don't know. So if they're new ones listening. And the name's different, yeah. So my name on the book is Jasmine Beverly. And my teacher name's different, so they won't be able to link it. But I wouldn't mind sharing. It's just been, I've just kept it quiet for now, I guess. But I wouldn't mind sharing because it's something that I believe will empower and encourage so many people, including young people as well. You know, as they grow older and make decisions and getting into and marrying and getting into relationships, or even experiencing abuse or any emotional abuse or situation, even with family or friends, I think it can empower and help so many people. So I think it's just a matter of time before I release the news to my school.
Well, we wish you all the luck, and it's fantastic that you've found somebody to take you through to that point. And the doors that will now open, I suppose.
Yeah, thank you so much. And again, thank you to Danny at Conscious Dreams Publishing. I'm really grateful. And yeah, thank you for interviewing me. I really appreciate it.
It's been our pleasure and our honour. So thank you very much for spending some time with us. We ought to be honest with you and say that we had a couple of interviews lined up with some more significant authors, which unfortunately, due to their schedules, fell through today. So we hope that we've brought you a real sense of the festival.
We've got another apology to make.
Yes.
You did promise the Pineapple Man. Now, the problem with the Pineapple Man, we think, is he only booked a stall for the day.
He was here for a day and we had our opportunity. We missed it. But I tell you what we'll do is we'll go online. We'll find an extract of Pineapple Wisdom.
Yes.
And I will narrate
it.
Yeah.
Are you going to narrate it?
I'll narrate it. Albeit I can't get his accent entirely right because it was so authentically American.
You think? I thought he had a bit of a hybrid accent.
Well, I thought he was American, but...
No, he was American, but there was a bit of a British influence.
Well, maybe.
Anyway,
well,
we don't know.
The mystery of Pineapple Man continues. But we've had, it's been a day we won't forget in a hurry. And it's been at times challenging day, but also a very affirming day.
I have to talk about my highlight of the day. I mean, obviously Uncle Bob, but second to Uncle Bob was talking to a Texan cow rancher.
Yes.
Who is, her fascination is science and scientists. And she gave me a book for Toby.
On Charles Darwin.
So
she was wonderful.
She was wearing this lovely dress. She was really small and thin and delicate as well.
She's handled steers and as you do in Texas.
She's a cow lady. She was brilliant.
She's a cow lady. Not often you could say that and get away with it. Well, thank you yet again for joining us on the Hopcast Book Show. We're always gratified that you would sign up and listen to us. You can get more details about our books, our authors, and everything else at Hobeck at www.hobeck.net. And we'll be back again for the final day of the London Book Fair with another Hopcast special. And we'll look forward to speaking to you then. So from me, Adrian Hobart.
And me, Rebecca Collins.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Hopcast from the London Book Fair. And we'll speak to you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Hobcast from Hobeck Books with Adrian Hobart and Rebecca Collins. You can find the show notes at our website, www.hobeck.net. You can also use the exclusive Hobcast discount code for any of the products at our Hobeck online store. Just enter the code HOBCAST20 for a 20% discount. Don't forget to subscribe to the Hobcast and feel free to contact us with any feedback. Until next time, remember our motto, Trad Values, Indie Spirit.